Have we forgotten how to behave in the clinic these days? This week, we want to talk about some of the generational differences and how we can help improve the manners and etiquette of each other when we're dealing with clients and coworkers. This week on The Veterinary Viewfinder. The Veterinary Viewfinder, the podcast that tackles the toughest topics in veterinary medicine. And this week, it's a tough topic because we're talking about a breadth of problems, including generational differences and just losing some of the etiquette and manners that we should have in dealing with each other and the public. This week, we want to talk about how you can take stock of your team's current manners, if you will, and client service, and how you can coach them into the desired behaviors you want. But before we start talking about all that coaching and desired behaviors, as always, I am one of your co-hosts, Dr. Ernie Ward.
And I'm registered veterinary technician, Becky Mosser.
And Becky, you know, this conversation today stems from something I ran across in a conversation I had with a couple of veterinary owner colleagues. And basically, it was like this. It was like, gosh, I'm so concerned. The manners, the etiquette of some of my younger team members just, they don't seem up to snuff or standards of what I'm used to. My home training is different. And so, you know, it was, how do we reach different generations? Because right now we've got maybe four generations in the workplace. And what's normal? What's abnormal? How can we coach and change? I mean, Becky, there's a lot to unpack in this discussion.
Yeah. It's a real judgy conversation, right? I'll say that up front. It is kind of saying, here are our situational and social norms. And when we see outside of that, from a judgment standpoint, but also from an observational standpoint, how does that impact our clinic?
Right. And I think too, Becky, you know, I think for Viewfinder's sake, you know, and for our sake and sanity, you know, we'll try to keep it to real definite examples. For example, like, you know, how do we discuss and talk and maintain eye contact, right? Because I think, Becky, what we're seeing is, for the first time, we're seeing, you know, Gen Z enter into the workforce en masse, and, you know, they really grew up digitally, right? So they grew up on Zoom school and iPads and everything, you know, text messaging and so forth. And I think that, you know, when you look at millennials, especially older millennials and Gen X and boomers for sure, you know, technology was sort of an adjunct. It's something that we later added into. So we sort of have a foundation in how to relate to each other, communicate to each other. But now we're dealing with younger folks that maybe don't place the emphasis, or I guess you should say the need, on some of these interpersonal, in-person skills. Is that making sense?
Yeah. And I mean, just to survive in society, you have to have some kind of interpersonal skills, right? But it starts to feel like more and more we're all speaking different languages. And things are so technical and specific nowadays, it feels like, and maybe that's just because I'm getting old, so I'm left out of them. But it's a lot of different languages. It's a lot of different social norms among generations. And how we get comfortable with that crossover is tricky.
Yeah. And I'll give you a real example, Becky, and I think this would benefit the viewfinders as well. And basically, this was an owner of a vet clinic, and she was about my age, so she's in her 50s. And she has a brand new young associate, new grad, you know, so this is a person in their mid to late 20s. And they had a case, a bit of a challenging case, and had maybe some complications, if you will, but things just weren't kind of going right. And the owner had called back at the clinic and wanted some clarification on something. And basically, the owner overheard the young associate talking to the receptionist and said, oh, yeah, just text her back. And suddenly the boss, the owner says, whoa, this is a phone call. And you see the disconnect already, right? There's the difference,
yeah.
Right? So one is saying, no, text message is fine, appropriate, even though it's a complication. The other, the older vet is saying, no, this is an in-person or at least on the telephone call. Becky, I mean, have you encountered things like that in the vet tech sphere?
Well, I think so. And I think for us, obviously, it has less to do with the way we communicate with clients, because I think we, from an age standpoint, are primarily of the technology era. But I think where we see it more is technicians who are maybe not as technology savvy and struggling with paperless systems.
Good point.
And those types of communicating with clients, or you know, now we use an iPad to do all that. So I feel like for us, less than like the communication issue in terms of being able to communicate effectively or recognizing a situation says this needs a personal touch, right? Like, it seems like it was really oblivious in your example, like, oh, well, what's wrong with a text message? You can profusely apologize through text. And you're like, no, in our generation, this is like, I want to make sure everything's okay. I want to.
Right.
And I think also it's our need to hear the tone, you know, listen to the influx of, like, we get a lot of cues from that. I don't know that the technology generation, the younger and younger that they are, that those cues are actually happening as readily for them, or that they're as needed. And that might be a good thing. Maybe they won't internalize as much as we do, right, because the inflection doesn't matter. But for us right now, we say things like, well, a text message and an email, the tone can be mixed. But like, maybe their generation is reading it for what it is.
Right. That's a really good point. And again, you know, what I stressed to this owner, Becky, was, okay, this is an opportunity to coach, to mentor, to train, to teach, right? And so I don't think that in these situations, I think it's very easy to dismiss outright, criticize, maybe even shame, say, oh my gosh, you know, of course we don't text message, you know, a complicated case. This owner needs to be spoken to in person, blah, 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 right? There's no value in that. But I do think that it's worth that time to spend that couple of minutes to mentor them. And by that, I mean, you know, you've got to say, okay, look, hey, you know, I totally get it. Explain to me, you know, what you want to say in the text, and maybe start there to get, what are they trying to get across to the person? And then say, okay, let's talk about that. Do you think this would be better served or better received by the client if it were a phone call or a text message? And kind of try to meet them somewhere in the middle, or at least accommodate them as much as possible. Because, you know, again, I think that what I'm seeing, Becky, is, and again, as Gen X, you know, who has kind of grown up in both worlds, right, with technology and no technology, and I'm seeing that, you know, I need to adapt to the newer technology, because there are a lot of folks that are going to be out there and say, no, I think almost everything can be handled remotely, virtually, you know, text message wise, whatever. And then there's going to be others that say none of that is appropriate. So, you know, I'm kind of at a blend at this point, but I do think that if that situation happens, viewfinders, you need to have a mentor who is going to say, let's guide ourselves and arrive at a conclusion and a decision and an action that actually benefits our patients first and foremost. So, you know, Becky, what I'm saying is I think that there's that coaching aspect of it, because I think that too often we just say, you're right, I'm wrong, when we're trying to make it better.
Yeah, but as I sit here and reflect on this situation, what I'm hearing myself, and okay, so I'm the borderline millennial. I think I'm like barely a millennial, but like months, you know, I'm an 81 baby.
Right.
And so there's like a why, like we have this kind of, we have this own, our own little gen that's not recognized, that's really bridged these between the two.
Yeah.
But I think to myself, like, if I, and I guess I would need the backstory, but in this particular case, if I texted in the first place asking for clarification, I would expect a text message back, because that's how I initiated the conversation. Now, if they called me, I can literally see myself right now being like, why are they calling me? I sent a text message. Obviously, I don't want to talk to a person, because like, we all hate talking to people now, right? Like, that's right, the other thing, right, about the younger generations. Nobody wants to be on the phone. So I think I would have a little bit, I would be mad. But then if it was the vet saying, hey, I read your text and I just was worried and it was easier to talk in person or whatever, I would be like, okay, fine, that's fine. But so part of me could almost see the text back being appreciated, in the sense that I don't want to talk to anybody. That's why I sent a text in the first place.
Right.
So I don't think it would be wrong to call back, but like, I'm almost seeing this girl's point of view of kind of like, well, they initiated a text conversation, so I'm responding that way. And I think that even splits this.
Yep.
Even further, because we are talking about our staff and our teams, but at the same time, this also applies and goes a step further to our clients.
Right.
So our clients who prefer to talk in text than those on the phone, and the ones that are going to expect a phone call versus a text, we're really in a situation where I feel like we almost have to overthink how we communicate.
Yeah, and I love that. And again, that's why my emphasis is on not shaming and blaming and just dismissing,
right,
but actually having a conversation and trying to arrive at the best decision. Because you're right. I mean, viewfinders, this is nuanced, and we're literally in this period where there's a confluence of these, right? So there are, like Becky said, there are some folks that prefer this method, others that don't at all. Some are adept at it and some need help. And so I think that we're going to have to realize that anytime you're in a period of sort of transition, that you're going to have to say, all right, my old way may need to be rethought, or the new way may not be appropriate, right? But we've got to be a lot more open-minded, not just shaming and blaming, because I think that's where, you know, when every time I hear somebody say, oh, it's that younger generation, you know, I realize that, boy, that's a closed-minded approach to it. You know what I'm saying? It's just like to broadly say, oh gosh, all of you guys, based on when you were born or this way, you know, that's very limiting. And I get it. There are some times when I have to use this as a shortcut to make a point. But the reality is, one-on-one in your clinic, if you're going to mentor and guide and raise up the next generation, you're going to have these conversations. Becky, let's spin it slightly differently. Okay. Let's say that you now hire this young, either vet tech or receptionist, doesn't matter, an assistant, right? But let's take it out of the associate vet realm right now. And let's say that, you know, again, they're very young, maybe they're early 20s, and they have grown up on a virtual world, you know, and that their stage is all about, you know, the internet. And suddenly now we're putting them in the exam room or the lobby, and they really don't know how to maybe interact and do the small talk as we discussed. Becky, what kind of advice do you have for those folks that are saying, okay, I'm recognizing there might be a communication problem here, but how can you do that in a fashion that is effective but also isn't harmful to that person?
Yeah, you know, it's a hard one, and I think it's a little bit of obviously in particular cases, but for one, give them what they need to be successful. So
yeah, good, good.
I think sometimes we can start with, how do you feel it's going? Or what strengths do you feel like you want to work on? What is the most difficult? And maybe it is like, I don't know what to say to them. Like, I'm not big on conversating or whatever, you know?
Right, right.
Okay. Would it help if we had a little bit of a script? If I gave you some cue cards, some prompt cards, questions you can ask, conversations you can have, then the next thing is, hey, why don't you work rooms with so-and-so, that really personable, outgoing, social person,
right?
And you can pick up some cues from them and learn kind of, this is our most talkative, chatty, you know, the clients all lover. Now, I think we also have to think about who we're hiring in this case too, right? Because it is difficult. And we've talked about this, but like, if you have a person who's very, very skilled in one area or several areas of veterinary medicine, but socializing is not one of them, we can help them to improve that skill, but are we setting them up for success by putting them in exam rooms in the first place?
Right.
And this is where that whole, everything has to be fair, everybody has to work rooms, everybody has to work lab, everybody has to do everything. Then you're putting people in a position where you're not optimizing their strengths.
Right.
So to some extent, you may need to recognize this person is not ever going to be Susie Sunshine. And if she's making clients mad, then we need to put her in a different place in the hospital, not just get rid of her.
Right, right. Yeah, I always agree. Play to their strengths and then work on their weaknesses while you're actually in a position of power. So I love that fact. The other thing too, you know, Becky, I was talking to a veterinarian, and this did apply to an associate vet. But, you know, I remember years ago, actually, this would be part of our training. And we would recognize, you know, some of our staff, especially the younger folks, just didn't know how to give a confident handshake. You know, things like that, that you often overlook or forget about. But, you know, these are opportunities for you to elevate that person, right? So, you know, I don't think it's inappropriate to maybe work on these types of soft skills in particular. You know, and I know a lot of times, you know, Becky, I've always had the pushback, you know, we don't know how to train this, or we don't know how to broach this topic or whatever, but I think you just nailed it. And this is something I've lived by, and that is leading by example, you know? So just doing the things that you want in others, you know, again, living the actions and the behaviors that you want to see in the world, that really does get you pretty far down the road with this. But, you know, Becky, what about some of those soft skills, like, you know, making small talk and, you know, eye contact and good handshake, and any of those kind of things resonate with you for the support staff in particular?
Well, I'm really hung up on the handshake thing because I hate a weak handshake. I think I was like a tiny baby and I was taught, and I mean, I have a firm, I like, yeah, I surprise men when I shake their
hand. Yeah. You have a confident handshake. Yeah.
Yeah. But I can say, to me, that doesn't feel generational because I have shook plenty of hands of people who are two generations over me who have wimpy, gross handshakes. So I don't know what school that got taught in and which ones it didn't, but it seems across the board. So, okay, that's an aside because that one tweaks me. If I meet you out in public and you want to shake my hand, make it good. Otherwise, fist bump me, okay? Because I'll be judging you.
Right, agreed.
But so I think, and we talked about this before, we've kind of touched on this. What are we responsible for teaching our teams and not? And I do think there's an opportunity, right? Like I have had professional speaking coaching. I've had interaction coaching. I've had that coaching in my career because it applies to my career. I think it's a great idea. And just like we were talking about, call the fire department, have them come out and start a fire so everybody can practice a fire extinguisher.
Right.
Having somebody come out who helps teach everybody great interaction or social or how to answer questions, you know, without putting blame anywhere, just being able to explain things in a way that don't sound accusatory, just like those types of skills, and they can always be honed. So right. I think that's an amazing idea. Like we're out here doing all the technical lunch and learns, but what if we just did some really silly role playing and really worked on those skills and everybody can kind of shake the nerves out, but really emphasize this is important. I personally think that's good because one, we want to improve our employees for our practice, but two, we should be contributing back to them in their lives, the things they can take and move on with.
Yeah, exactly. And again, this whole conversation was sparked by, you know, are we forgetting how to behave in the workplace, right? I mean, that's really what stemmed from this. And I think that because of differences in generational upbringings, if you will, life experiences, some of the younger generation, particularly maybe are more comfortable just transmitting everything via text or whatever, right? A virtual setting, and others are not. And so I think that, you know, what we've got to do is realize that in the public sphere, like veterinary medicine is conducted in person. And there's really no way around it that I can figure out yet. I haven't figured out the teleportation hologram part of this medicine yet, Becky. And so, you know, again, it's like, what are you doing to make sure that your staff is, you know, has that professional deportment that you want, that you feel like your clients deserve or need? And so, you know, these are they're tough topics. They're soft skills, but honestly, they make the biggest difference in culture and in success, in my opinion, and experience, Becky. I mean, you know, I think that, you know, it's kind of funny when you know it when you go into a place of business where like everybody is just professional. They're kind of next level. You're kind of like, wow, these people are really on top of their game. And everything kind of, you know, it's a great experience. And then, of course, you also go into some places where you're like, what the heck just happened? You know, these people don't know anything and they're rude and they're whatever. And you know what I'm saying, Becky? It's like, that's culture. That's also an important part of culture, not just knowing the medicine, being good at surgery and diagnosis. But, you know, it's also how do we comport ourselves around our clients and each other?
Yeah, it makes me, honestly, I'm sitting here thinking of like, yeah, you go to a fancy steakhouse and you get all concierge service and everybody is great at what they do. Partially because they're being compensated to do it. Right. They know you're going to leave a $100 tip. It's really easy to be nice to people who you know are going to hand you $100 when you're done with them in an hour.
Right.
So part of it is that concierge service. That said, I then think about Chick-fil-A. And you go into a Chick-fil-A, it's a fast food restaurant. You've got a bunch of kids working there for the most part. And they're top notch. They're taught how to, you know, how's your day going? Make small talk if you're at the window with them and waiting in line. They know how to be accurate. They know how to be concise. They know how to conduct themselves very professionally. And I'm not saying it's ubiquitously across the world, but they have an incredible training program. They've proven it time and time again. And they obviously take care of their employees. And I think this is like a big thing is happy employees are going to do a better job. They're going to see the value in those soft skills. So I think it's important to say that you can't just put everybody in a training room and tell them to be nicer, right, tell them to be better,
right,
tell
right.
them to make eye contact for $8 an hour, right? You have to show that you are as invested in them. And when you get those two things together, you get magic, you know, you get 18-year-olds who are, it's their pleasure to fill your drink, you know?
Right.
And so I think that plays a big part in it. And if you have a team, if you have a group of people that are kind of rogue, or like I said, my husband would say feral, then we kind of have to look at do they see the value in even demonstrating or using these soft skills?
Right. And again, this is that opportunity, once again, viewfinders, for you to have these conversations with your team. What would they like more training on, right? Would they like to have discussions around how we greet folks and handshake and, you know, strength and eye contact? Are they interested in that? You know, Becky, this goes back to something in the late 90s that, and I, at the time, I wrote about it in Vet Economics, and I remember having a lot of critics, but basically we were looking at what scrubs should our staff wear, right? And we were specifically looking at what color. And so Laura had suggested, you know, that we bring in and do the whatever, you know, your color chart. So like, you know, you find out what colors you should wear. You know what I'm talking about, and I'm not really good at articulating this. Laura said, would you be interested in us having somebody coming in and reading each of our colors and then kind of giving us, you know, what would be best for the team, right? That kind of discussion. And of course, the team at the time was like, wow, yeah, this sounds great. But then another thing spun out of that. Several of them said, well, listen, could they also help us with, like, you know, makeup techniques and all this stuff? And I'm kind of like going, oh my gosh, no, we can't go there. But they wanted it. So this person who did it, and what I found at the end of this, number one, it was a wonderful experience. We wound up repeating that every year for many, many years. And again, volunteers, whatever, but everybody did it. But I'll tell you, Becky, I'll never forget, at the end of the first time doing this, one of our really good employees, and to be honest, she was in the kennel, she came into the office one afternoon after this, you know, like a few days afterward. And she said, you know, I just want to tell you, thank you so much. I've always wanted to have that done, but I just never did for a wide variety of reasons. And so she was so appreciative of an experience that helped her, right? In her personal life and professional life, whatever. So I would say, have that conversation and find out what your team wants, because there may be needs that you aren't even aware of, right? You know what I'm saying, Becky? So I think that for me, it's like, what maybe they want to talk about small talk. Maybe they don't feel comfortable at knowing when to draw the line between text message versus, you know, a phone call, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's such a beautiful story, actually. That is so sweet, because, you know, it's funny, especially as a woman, so for the female experience here, saying like, hey, a lot of women don't know how to do their makeup. And so when you do just something tiny like that and it tied into something else, they feel more confident They're able to feel prettier or whatever. And it makes them more confident. Confidence is what we want in our employees, right? It's easier to trust somebody who's confident. They're going to do a better job. So having I guess what I want to say is the ripple effect of that is not just gaining a new skill, but it's finding a new confidence in somebody and helping them feel more confident. I only want to caveat the eye contact thing with, we have so many folks that we're learning are in various places of the spectrum, and eye contact is absolutely part of that for our folks with autism or are in different parts of the spectrum. So I try really hard not to judge on eye contact. If we know for sure that it's just somebody who's bad at making eye contact and it's something that they want to be better about, I'd be happy to help them. But we want to be really careful judging that aspect.
Oh, yeah. And again, it's just not judging. It's just sort of like saying, is this something that you want to do or not? You know, and you're
right.
And then not putting people in those positions, as you mentioned earlier, where they're setting up to fail, right? You know, I mean, that's just not maybe going to be their strength. There might be 1,000 other things that they're much, much better at. And then they can keep working on that if they choose to as they move forward. But I think, you know, that really just gets back to the whole thing. You know, when we talk about, you know, are we misbehaving in the workplace? Are we being rude? Are we miscommunicating, right? You know, and really it's our fault. I think that it all stems from a lack of communication amongst team members, right? And really not setting expectations from a leadership position, right? And then not providing resources. Like, you know, it's, and I love what you said earlier in the conversations and viewfinders, you got to, you know, it's one thing to tell people this is kind of what we're striving for, but if you do not give them the support and resources and tools to accomplish that, it's just meaningless words. And I think that's where so many people fail in so many things in their life, is the fact that, you know, they say, hey, let's do this, but they don't ever do anything to make it actually happen. You know, it's just all words. And that's really frustrating to me.
Yeah. Idea fairies there, you know, it's great to have lots of idea fairies, but you've got to have some action items too. And, you know, at the end of the day, it is part of our job to vet people appropriately. I think that it's not fair to say, well, I'm going to hire this technician. She has no idea how to do this skill, but I'm going to go ahead and train her, if you're not willing to say they need some strength in communication, but I'm going to give them that training as well. So I think as much as we look at the technical side, we should be looking during interviews at those soft skills and making sure that they fit in within the clinic. Not that we shouldn't be enhancing them, but again, don't hire somebody that doesn't demonstrate the things that you need and then be mad that they don't.
Oh, I love that so much. So viewfinders, what do you think? Do you think we've lost the ability to behave in our clinics? Do we need help with our soft skills and small talk and handshakes? If so, what's the best way to do it? I'd love to hear your thoughts and experiences on this because, guys, this is one of those areas that we all struggle with. This is one of those tough topics that will never go away because we're trying to make it better. And this is one of those areas where have that conversation with your team, see what they want to work on, and then make it happen. Becky, if people want to tell us how they're making it happen, where can they make that happen?
Well, if you're planning on misbehaving, you probably need to go over to Vet Tech After Hours.
Yes, absolutely.
And pour one with those guys. But if you want to behave, you can head over to Veterinary Viewfinder on Facebook and Instagram or email me at veterinaryviewfinder@gmail.com.
That's right, guys. Hopefully this has inspired you to make your workplace a little more civil and up the etiquette game. But again, guys, we know that there's a lot of issues out there and this is just one of them. So go out there and make things better for your world. Talk to you next week. Bye.
Bye.